There's a mechanic in there where it's like, it leads you to ask, like, create a code name that is a farm animal and then a farm export. So, for instance, horse egg. And I did that so that I could have a character groundedly named Dog Nuts. And they did not print that character. Let's just say Dog Nuts lives on in my head on this podcast and pretty much nowhere else.
Hello guys, gals, and non-binary pals, and welcome back to the Geek Peek channel for our creator interview of the week featuring the one and only Amy Vorpahl. Join us as we talk about how she got into the scene, her ideal table, and stick with us towards the end to find out her thoughts on that picture on all of the dating apps. Stay tuned. Thanks. Thank you everybody for coming to the channel. I am Cody here with the amazing Amy Vorpahl.
Hi!
D&D player, runner, writer, songstress, dungeon master, mistress? Which one do you prefer?
Ooh, a mistress sounds nice.
Yeah, make it a little more...
I guess I was going to say I don't have a preference, but that's not true. I think I prefer dungeon mistress.
Yeah, it sounds a little more professional.
I was gonna say sexual, but yes.
Well, yeah, I don't want to. I'll let you make the first sexual joke, and then I'll feel more comfortable making them as well.
Yes.
Okay. Now that's out of the way, the very first thing I want to actually talk about has nothing to do with anything I just mentioned. So you're a repeat presenter on Dropout's Breaking News.
Yes.
And there was an episode that just aired where you didn't use your don't laugh face, but you were using like an accent and it seemed to work better. Is that, do you lean into the, like, you seem, I don't have the exact numbers, but I'm pretty sure you've lost the most episodes or lost by the most points.
Yeah.
Is that something that you lean into because of that whole format? I know you've done a lot of other acting in general, so you are very good at it. But is that something you just kind of focus on, just the laughing part during those segments, or how does that work for you?
I would say, yeah, since like in the first episode I ever did, I was so trying so hard not to laugh and it wasn't working. And then as time went on, I think they're in their sixth season, you know, like, and I've been on handfuls and handfuls, maybe dozens, like, I don't know, many of the episodes. And so the way the game and like what they're looking for has shifted, you know, from person to person and what you bring to the table. And so I feel like my role has shifted a little bit where it's kind of almost welcome for me to laugh. So, you know, I can say I try not to laugh as much as I want to say it. And I also know it's welcome. So the, you know, consciously and subconsciously, I will say I'm trying a little less hard. It's not to laugh. I think that just goes with the territory of things, you know, growing and fluctuating. So doing the accent was not a ploy. I just started, you know, you don't know what you're reading, and that showed up on the teleprompter and it sounded like ye old accent was being called for.
Count Dankula.
Yeah, Count Dankula, exactly.
Yeah.
There is an AI episode that was written by AI, and it is mentioning, like, AI wrote what they think Breaking News actually is and defined it. And they mentioned me that they said, I'm trying to see if I can quote it directly because part of me wants to use this for my bio, whether it's D&D or acting or writing or whatever. And just because it's Amy Vorpahl is an actress who absolutely cannot keep her shit together on Dropout's Breaking News. You can learn more about Amy by searching on Bing.com. And there's something like that that's in the quote that I was like, gosh, pretty good, you know, like as far as a bio goes.
And also like a backhand compliment because searching on Bing, like nobody uses Bing.
I know, but apparently that's how you can learn more about me. So,
okay.
I like that. I like that it was generated by AI and they got it pretty close. I also, I like that AI just included a call to action for no reason.
Yeah. In that same vein of Dropout, you do still do a lot, obviously, with Breaking News. And I know that you were also on one season of Dimension 20.
Yes.
Escape from the Blood Keep, playing Murder Death. That's on my apologies.
How dare you?
No. How dare I? I haven't been, written down.
God, it's been like 6 or 7 notes. Years.
It's been a while, yeah. Is there any talks for you to come back for another season? Maybe behind the table at this point, or no?
No, nothing like that. Yeah. Not that I know of, it, at least. But, you know, should it happen, I'm around.
So you've been involved in the scene for quite some time. Can you tell me about, like, that very first, like, what first drew you in? You know, was there a certain game or a certain person that kind of, like, first exposed you to, like, the TTRPG scene?
Ooh, I mean, I started playing when I was 18. So I was a freshman in college, and that was back in 2003, I guess. So 20 years. Oh my gosh, 20 years ago. And I was in my dorm room. I was decorating it. And my cousin, who was already at the University of Oklahoma, she brought her friend in. And his name is literally Nathan Strange. I'll never forget Nathan. And I had about 9 Lord of the Rings posters on my wall and a Yoda poster, Yoda mosaic poster. And then he knew that I was an acting major, and he just kind of went, "Ooh, have I got the game for you?" And kind of did the math for me. And either that night or the next afternoon, I really can't remember, but it was like an insanely short amount of time that we were playing D&D 3.5 edition, and then we were off to the races. So that's how I got involved in TTRPGs and kind of never looked back. I mean, we played all the time. There were so many hours. And then that summer, we were all university RAs, and we either worked, you know, we just gave kids a bunch of keys, or we were playing the D&D PlayStation 2 game, or we were playing D&D. That's it. Those are the only things we did that summer. And then during the school year too. And then, yeah, moving out to LA, I had a little bit of a difficult time trying to find people to play with that were aligned, I guess, or like, you know, trying to make friends. Because sometimes you can find people to play with, but they're not the people you want to play with. And I was just bouncing between like, oh, maybe this could work. Oh, no. And then the way I got into performing was like I was doing hella improv, lots and lots of improv and sketch comedy. And some friends were holding some auditions because they wanted to do a how to play web series. And so I auditioned and I like brought all my books and I was like, I'm the real deal. I can do this. You know, I really wanted to be in that mix. And that was Saving Throw Show. And so I got into Saving Throw Show, and that they were pretty big players on the Twitch and YouTube space and actual plays for a really long time. And from there, magic, you know. And then I got my friend group and I got my play, like, to play D&D, and I got to also perform it as a show, which is equally fun, if not more. So yeah. Long story. Was that what you wanted?
Oh yeah, it was absolutely what I wanted. Yeah, fantastic.
Okay, cool.
Going back to that, like, that first game in college, do you happen to remember, like, that first character you played?
Yes, I was a rogue, and her name was Nefariel Benedin, and she was a halfling. Okay. And I made it talk, like, a little bit like Audrey from whatever that show, Audrey, Little Shop of Horrors. Like, she was just,
oh,
like,
yeah, yeah, okay.
I'm Nefariel Benedin. And she like had that cute voice. I was the only one doing voices. Like, all of these people were meteorology majors. I guess Nathan was a film major, but everyone else was like random majors. So there was no other theater major in it, but I was like, time for me to do a voice. Don't mind if
Let's
I do.
Go.
Yeah.
Were you, the biggest curse of D&D is not being able to finish games. Were you able to finish out her storyline or that game you were playing, or did it?
It did fall apart, but not until like 3.5 years later, when one of the teammates, Nathan's twin brother, Brandon Strange, took a feat that was something like, I can't remember all the 3.5 feats, but it was leadership or something like that, where he got to have basically a minion come around with us. And he chose that the minion would be an assassin. And that assassin started stepping on my roguelike toes. And I kind of got a little bit like, well, you know, she was a little more arcane, I think, than I was, so she could go invisible. And I was like, no, like, that's not fair. And he would just say what she did. And I was like, well, that's what I was about to do. You know what I mean? Like, it just started getting pretty contentious. And then he had this story that he wasn't who he said he was or whatever. And like, I think it was Brandon who, well, it was, maybe I could have worked together with the assassin, but I will say it did fall apart. There was one supreme sorcerer that we were trying to get, and we got him like two or three different times, but he always escaped or whatever. And then we did actually get him the last time, like to hit his essence into a tiny crystal. And I feel like that after that, we felt pretty good about ourselves. And we never got to 20th level, but I think we got to 15th or 16th level. And we just decided to like clean slate, start over. And I was then a dwarf fighter. I was a dwarf. I can't remember if I had, I think I had magic too, though. So I can't remember what kind, it doesn't matter, whatever. Her name was Azdeath Huron. And she made rope squirrels as a hobby. Like, instead of balloon animals, she made rope animals.
Oh, that's cute.
Yes.
I like that when people have like those little traits that like don't really have any element to like your character mechanically in game. It doesn't make you a better fighter or a healer or whatever, but like it just gives those characters more personality to have.
That it makes the children there. Like you.
And it makes the children like you. Yeah. And children know everything. They hear everything.
Yes, they do.
You've written a few D&D like stories. I believe you were in Candlekeep Mysteries. You wrote one of the modules for that.
I did. I wrote an adventure called Candlekeep Deconstruction
for Candlekeep Mysteries. Can you tell me something about that? Was that like wholly original?
Yes.
Or was that like one of the older ones that they put in? Oh, that was okay.
It was wholly original. We all got to like pitch what our ideas were, and I got told yes the whole way through. It was just a delightful experience. I pitched something fairly whimsical and odd and offbeat, and Chris Perkins was the development lead on that. So I think I spoke to him because he was just like, this sounds delightful. And I really was just trying to, you know, write an adventure that I thought would be fun. It was, what can I tell you about it? It is based in Candlekeep, and the mystery of it that you are trying to solve is around the Candlekeep library and its architecture. And it involves the custodial staff of the Candlekeep Library. So you do have some run-ins with those. And it gets silly. I would say I didn't know that I was writing such a silly adventure. I knew I was trying to go fun. But yeah, it does lean towards silly vibes. And the reveal is a little shocking as well.
Okay. I've played a few of the adventures in Candlekeep Mysteries. I have not made it to that one yet, though.
Oh, okay, so cool. Yeah, they put it in the middle of the book because it's a bit of a tone breaker.
Keep an eye out for the whimsical, silliness.
Yeah, like a lot of them are dark, and like the mystery is noir-esque or something, and then you get to mine, and it's like, bumper-der-der-der, you know?
it's a good little palate cleanser. Like, it can't be just all dark and brooding, because then it's like Descent into Avernus or Out of the Abyss, one of those like, super dark ones. No, you need a little palate cleanser. Take a break, have some fun.
Yes. Yeah,
absolutely.
Go silly. It's primed for that. And there's some mechanics, some light mechanics in there to even lean you even more towards some silliness, including silly names.
Oh, okay. Silly names.
Well, I'll tell you one thing about it. There's a mechanic in there where it's like, it leads you to ask, like, create a code name that is a farm animal and then a farm export. So, for instance, horse egg or alpaca, macadamia nut or chicken peach, whatever.
Yeah.
And I did that so that I could have a character groundedly named Dog Nuts. And they did not print that character. Let's just say Dog Nuts lives on in my head on this podcast and pretty much nowhere else. But the players are very, who's to say you can't create your own code name that is Dog Nuts or anything that horse nuts, bull nuts, goat nuts.
We'll dedicate this episode to Dog Nuts.
Yeah.
May they rest
R.I.P.
in peace.
R.I.P.
Exactly. Excuse me. How was that in terms of like playtesting, you know, like balancing, making sure that like the encounters that you had written in were balanced for the type of party that the book was written for?
Yeah. So I actually signed on to write, I think, a level 4 or 5 adventure, maybe even a level 3. And just by nature of what I had written and the monsters that I had developed, it turned into a level 7. So ouch. That's okay. Yeah. It didn't, yeah. It wound up not, no one got mad about it is what I'll say. Okay. Like it morphed and changed and that was fine. And it's, I feel like other, I feel like some people's changed as well, but yeah, like it was fine, you know?
Okay.
So, and I also will say that once it got to playtesting, we as creators and writers like didn't ever really see it again until it was printed. So we wrote draft, and then we had a developmental edit, and we did a second draft, and then they took it to playtesting. I think all of us were like, "Well, we'll playtest it. Like, what do you, you know, what do you need?" That kind of thing. And they were like, "We'll take it from here." But I was really, really pleased to see that. I would say 85% of what I wrote is in the book, and you know, so much of it is like, you know, well honored of what I did write. Like even the added 15% that I'm like, oh, I don't recognize that. It's like, oh, well, that's additive. Y'all just made it better. That's cool. You know?
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's something that always, like, I'm always intrigued to, like, all right, you have this one book, but there's like 17 different names credited to, like, who actually, like, how much did each person contribute to, like, Jeff pop in and say, hey, make that a gold dragon instead of a black dragon?
Yeah, there's no way to know. The most that they did change was the introduction, like how the characters found the book, and beyond that it was like, oh, that's, yeah, everything else was dead on. So I had it, I guess, what did I have it, I think I had it too complicated. Like, to find the book was actually like pretty complicated, and they made it so that you kind of can't miss it. Like, if you want them to read this book, here it is, you know? And I was like, okay, that's great. Cause I didn't know the tone of the rest of the book, or like how easy it should be, or if, you know, finding the book itself was its own quest. And I think I made it a little too, like, just give them the book, you know, like I made it a little like, ooh, let's find
the book.
You
made it more like,
ooh,
yeah, detective story to find it. And then they're like, yeah, just have it, just take it. Yeah.
I also wrote, I don't know if you want to, but I'm going to brag about myself, but for Watsy as well.
That's,
I wrote,
what this is all about. Brag about yourself as much as you want.
Yeah. For Fizban's Treasury of Dragons, that hardback book, I wrote the color commentary of Fizban. So I played the character of Fizban in the writing.
Oh,
yeah. So
well,
any of his
higher up my list to buy.
Yeah. Any of the like little jokes or quips that he wrote, or you know how Tasha's Cauldron or like Xanathar's, you get the,
yeah, there's the, like, there's little like their little notes and stuff throughout.
Exactly.
The book. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I wrote for Fizban. And
so
that was really cool.
Fizban.
And well, they thought of me because they were like, who could do silly really well? Cause Fizban is a bit of a doddering silly character. And it really, gosh, it was flattering because, you know, when you think of like a really, really hot white woman, you don't necessarily think of Fizban there. That's how I describe myself.
That's fair.
But it was like, I lean towards comedic. I have a lot of comedic writing in my background and everything. So to be chosen for that was like, they thought of me first. Like, it literally, the way they told me was like, we need someone to write for Fizban. And Chris Perkins was like, have you heard of Amy Vorpal? And then off to the races. So that felt really good.
Yeah, that's a heck of a compliment. They thought of you first and you got that's amazing. That's really cool.
Yes, thanks. I'm really proud of it.
Those are some of like the funnest thing parts about like the character specific modules too. Like, I have Xanathar's, and like you said, all those notes from Xanathar, again, it's the same thing as the making the rope animals. It makes it feel more real that this isn't just a textbook of everything.
Yeah.
It feels like an actual journal. So having those notes from Fizban him/herself would make it real feel more fleshed out.
Yes.
That's really, really cool. I did not know that at all.
Yay. Today I learned.
Yeah, today I learned. You released the new album last year.
Yeah.
I believe in March.
Yes.
Fantastic album, by the way. I've been listening to it on Spotify the last like 3 weeks.
Oh my gosh, thank you. That's quite a compliment.
It's really good. I like it. Like you said, it's fun and whimsical. I wanted to make note of, what was it? Fly Away Home?
Oh, Fly Home, yeah. Whoa, that, I did not expect that.
That's a really, really good song. I really like listening to that one. It's just that, like, ethereal, like, resurgence. It's like when the hero comes back from almost dying type of music is how yes. I feel when I listen to it. It's a really great song. Oh my God.
So I wrote that song because I've written an original like TV pilot that who knows what I'll do with it. But in that I needed a bit of it was like a song that is lore for the world, like, but also is a children's lullaby. And okay. In you know how lullabies are creepy as hell, and or you know they can be, and you're like, yeah, whoa, that's yeah, where that sure. came from. So I wrote it with that in mind. So it, to me, it was almost like the Hunger Games, like, are you coming to the hanging tree? Yeah, the hanging yeah. tree. And then it also was like from Hook, the stars are all my friends till the nighttime ends. And so I okay. wanted it to be this kind of haunting, but it's only haunting if you make it haunting. Otherwise it's like pretty, I mean, there are some, obviously some minor keynotes in there, but it's like, yeah. Anyway, that's so cool. Cause to me, that one's so like, well, you, here you go. You losers, you got, you rubes, you got this album that you thought was all D&D based. And now here's this like stinker song that I just wanted to put on there and there's nothing you can do to stop it. But the fact that you actually like it is really, I don't know. That's very, yeah, it's very cool. Cause it's definitely like an Amy, like I'm not pleasing anyone with that song. I just did it for myself. And yeah you, to handpick that one is like very interesting to me.
Well, hey, it works for me, so I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Absolutely. You've been in the scene for a while. You've played with some fantastic people. You played for and with. What would be an ideal table for you? If you could handpick... Oh, my gosh. We'll say five players. You could be one of them and have somebody DM, or you could be the DM, your choice. Let's yes. do five players. No scheduling conflicts, whatever. If you could have five people right here, what would be your ideal table?
Okay. So I know I've played with Matt Mercer, Delight. I've played like at Brennan's table. I think I would do another Brennan Lee Mulligan game, to be honest. Like yeah. I would want him to DM for me for the rest of my life. that sounds real, real good and nice to me. I think I also, who else would I want to improvise with? I mean, there's also like, who would I want to watch? Like sometimes at these tables, you're just sitting back and like watching the show and just going like, I'm just a bystander here and I'm having the time of my life. I mean, anyone from Escape the Blood Keep, but that feels like a cop out, honestly, to repeat everything. So maybe I'll choose people. Well, can I have played with them before, or what are the rules here?
The last time I asked this question, it was just one person who you'd want to play with. So maybe we should go with that. But maybe somebody that you, anybody living or dead.
Oh, okay. Is that making it even
more complicated?
No, I want to play with Olivia Colman. I want to play with Olivia Colman.
Oh my God.
That's it. She's my queen. She would be amazing. We would have some great fun. She'd be like any character she plays. I just want to watch the TV show or the movie and wait for her character to smile. Like that is, she's so endearing and charming. And I just always want the best for her character. And I just love her so much as a person, and I just want to be around her as much as possible, even though I've never been around her. So that's my answer.
That parasocial relationship that you develop,
unfortunately,
stuff. Like this is, I know who this person is in real life for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. That's it. That's what I want.
So a Brennan game, a run by Brennan game with Amy Vorpal and Olivia Colman.
Yeah. Juicy. I like just, that. It's going to be amazing. Get that going. Yes.
Back to the music. What, so like you made the comment about that one song just being a throwaway, your own song. What typically goes into like the creation process? Like, did you make each album for a specific theme, or were you going like, just, this is a song that I made and I like it, let's put it on the album?
Oh yeah. The first album, I've made three albums. The first two, one is solo. The second one I made was with Jason Charles Miller. And both of those were like, we were not trying to make an album. We just were playing games and we were inspired to write music about it. And we kind of set a challenge for ourselves, or like in It's Saving Throw, I set a challenge. Every time we play D&D, I'm going to come and like sing a song about whatever happened last time. And then when I started playing with Jason Charles Miller on Geek and Sundry, we set the same challenge for ourselves. And then by the end of it, you're left with, God, at least 20 songs. And, you know, I think I had 40 songs of, you know, varying degrees of good. But then you just pick, then I just picked the top 10 and said, I'm going to produce these, and there, that's the album. So it wasn't, the album was never like the first goal. It was just, oh, let's write some songs. And then that being said, this last album, the goal was to make an album. So there were some songs that I had written before that didn't make it to my first album. And I was like, well, these kind of are pretty good. Like, they deserve to be seen or heard out in the world. And then I did write some originals specifically for the album. Fly Home was one of them. And IDM was definitely one of them. And some of them were inspired by just like, oh, I've had this experience before. Some of them were just, they were songs that I had written 10 years ago, not even for an album. One of them, Behold Her Dreams, was one of the first songs I ever wrote just as a human being, had nothing to do with D&D or anything. And it was actually a really angsty song. Like, I went back and looked at the lyrics. I was like, I remember liking the song, but the lyrics were like, instead of Behold Her Dreams, the title of the song was I Don't Belong. And it was so freaking angsty. And I was like, well, I can't, that's not where I'm at. I cannot release that anymore. Like, that would feel, Behold Her, yeah, and it's not gonna happen. So I changed it to, I knew the album title was gonna be Behold Her Dreams. And I was like, actually, the scansion is dead on. What if I, you know, flipped the song all the way on its head? Because I really liked the melody that I had written. So that was that. But Tornado Jail was an original, and it was based on the Dropout Breaking News, where I did use the face and tried.
Yeah.
Because I was like, well, I need to honor. I was like, I, again, like, no one can stop me from writing a song and putting it on an album. And I already have y'all's money from the Kickstarter, so this song's going on it.
You messed up and give me your money.
Yeah. You get what you get. I think what we're talking about is creative control, but yeah, there's a little bit of a stinker energy in me that's like, ha-ha! I'm going to do a meme song. You're welcome.
I think at this point, that's like what you said with your, like, how you play Breaking News, like, people kind of expect that from you. Like, that's,
oh,
like,
a little stinker energy,
little stinker energy, little silliness. That's the energy that you put out there, so a lot of people pick up on that. They're like, that's what they're expecting at this point.
100%.
But I mean, it's a great energy to have. Like, you seem, everything that I've seen you in, you've always seemed to be like, you wanted to be there.
Oh, cool.
So it's always been like, I feel like you're definitely representing yourself in the things that I've seen you in, at least.
Oh,
anyways.
Thank you.
So it's always good to have that realness able to transcend through the screen or through the speakers or what have you.
Thanks.
What is something you have coming up that you would like to talk about?
Oh yeah, great. I am writing a movie, and I think the first way I'm doing that is writing a one-person show, and it is called Fucked for Christmas. And it is about a woman who writes to Santa Claus to get laid for Christmas, and the shenanigans that happen. It's definitely comedic, and it's a Hallmark Christmas movie kind of turned on its head. I really did just soft launch the Patreon to follow along, like, work in progress, like, last week. So anyway, patreon.com, and it's patreon.com/AmyVorpal, which is new and different. Normally I'm Vorpal Sword, but this Patreon is patreon.com/AmyVorpal. So I'm excited about that, about the journey. I'm very open to how it looks. Like, I might make a short film first before I dive all the way into the feature, but it also could, you know, the one person show could get a lot of attention and then we go straight to there. Or I just decide, screw it, I'm making the movie and that's that. And I have the script already in a good place. It's on its kind of third draft. And so I want to do one more draft. I have pitched it around to some people in Hollywood. They've been interested, but no bites. And so part of me is like, well, do I just do it on my own? I don't know. But you can follow along with me, yeah, the work in progress, and get some behind the scenes stuff at the Patreon.
Awesome. Fantastic. We'll put that link in the comments as well. Thank you. So you guys can hop over there to that, to subscribe to that.
My passion has always been long form narrative. So whether that's a TV, film, or web series, just a narrative story where, you know, the writer controls the beginning, middle, and end. I did sell a TV show about 6 years ago to Hulu called Must Love Dragons. And it obviously never saw the light of day, but we sold it and it was going to be really good. It was basically about nerdy girls dating, not okay, unlike Fucked for Christmas, which is about one nerdy girl dating, yeah, or, you know, doing at least something. Maybe she's not dating, but process. She's yeah, she's pretending to date.
Dating, dicking, whatever.
It's exactly, exactly. Yeah. So that has always been a passion of mine. And I'm kind of done thinking that it's difficult, because everyone's like, oh my God, that's so hard. That's so hard. And I'm like, is it? Like, it was fairly easy to sell that show. It might've just been in the zeitgeist at the time, but still, like, I had a really easy go of it. And so kind of want to do it again.
That's fantastic. You don't hear a lot of people like, oh yeah, no big deal. Whatever. I sold it. It's fine.
There was a time, I still think I would say that, like, selling a show is easier than being an actor. And I just, because it was like, it was the same thing as, you know, writing the Candlekeep adventure, where I just got told yes a lot. And it was like, okay, yeah. I guess I'm getting told yes a lot. But there wasn't, like, the stakes were high. Same as the adventure. Mm-hmm. I had so many panic attacks thinking, can I write an adventure for WotC? Oh my God, they got the wrong person. But you know, you look back and you're like, oh no, I totally can, because I did.
I got this.
But in hindsight, hindsight's way better.
Yeah. Everything looks better now. Sure. Or it's easier to see everything now.
Yeah. I had at least 3 panic attacks writing the Candlekeep adventures and more selling the show. So I'm not immune.
Yeah. It's one thing to make, like, to have a bad quest or a bad story at, like, your home table for, like, 4 or 5 friends, and they'll just forget about it. But, like, if you make a bad adventure and it's published in a book that sells millions of copies, like, that could be a little nerve-wracking. Yeah.
Well, also, along the way, they told us while I was writing it, they were like, just at every email, they were like, at every juncture, for every step, by the end of this, your adventure may not be printed. Like, and I know that some people, I don't know whose was, they didn't tell us who our cohorts of writers were. They never told us. We found out it was printed, but it was like, at every level our adventure could get cut, and then maybe we'd see it again, maybe not. But that was really intense, because it was like, gosh, I'm going to put a lot of effort into it. I want to be published. Like, that would be really cool. Yeah, and also to know that maybe I won't be published. Okay. Based on merit, like the meritocracy, I guess.
Like, they want to be above board with, like, hey, it might not make it, but also just like a weird threat that, hey, it might not make it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's how it felt, was like a threat, or yeah, like a warning, like, oh, something wicked lies behind these trees, you know? And it was like, okay, I guess I just keep going. It wound up working out for me, but that was a point of, anxiety for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. We've talked a lot about Dungeons & Dragons tonight. Are there any other systems that you have played around with that you really enjoy? Or are there any other systems that maybe you want to try to get into that you feel like would also fit your talent?
I have played really a ton of different games with different mechanics. D&D is the most accessible, but to me, just because I've done it for so long, and I think it is, you know, very in the zeitgeist. I really like it I really like DMing for new people. I've done a lot of, like, I've never played before tables, and those are freaking delightful. It also feels like the pressure is off for me a little bit too, because they're learning so much. They won't know if I'm doing a good job or a bad job, you know? So that's
very true.
Yeah. Like, this is their first entry point. But by the end of it, I will say the tables who have, I've done DM, you know, and just for friends and whatever, I'll kind of be like, okay, like I think I get a little burnt out a little easier now just from DMing, because I feel like I'm very saturated in it. But at some point I'll be like, okay, I think I'm good. Y'all, you know, I can refer some DMs to you, or you can find a DM, or if you want to, y'all want to take up the mantle. And then I'll leave, and without fail, I'll get a text like, oh shit, I think we're all realizing just, we didn't know how good we had it with you as the DM. And it's always nice to get that text. Gotta leave them wanting more.
I was like, can you come back? Can you?
Just
one more game.
Totally. But as far as other systems, you know, I think Call of Cthulhu is really good. I have only played one game of Vampire the Masquerade, but really liked it. 7th Sea, we did a little stint there. That was awesome. Pugmire was just D&D with dogs. And, Cortex. Cortex system. There's another one I'm thinking of. What is the Deadland system? I'm not sure. I can't remember. But yeah, there are tons. I mean, Kids on Bikes, whatever that
system. Kids on Bikes seems like a really fun system.
It is. It's fun. Like, a lot of them, I would say, as far as systems go, there are way more intuitive systems to tell stories than Dungeons & Dragons. Like, a lot of them are built to tell stories rather than D&D is this weird thing that, you know, formed and twisted and shaped itself from a war games system. And so, I would say most game systems that are storytelling TTRPG systems are more intuitive to build a story. The Fantasy Flight and the Fantasy Flight games with Star Wars, and then the Genesis system. I can't remember what the system called, but where you play Star Wars and Genesis is like you can play anything with Genesis. So, I mean, I think it's short for a generic system. So there's that too. Okay. That one's delightful. That one's a storytelling system for sure. And
what was it? GURPS?
I've never played GURPS, but yes. But
it's like that system, you can apply that system to like anything.
And yes.
Yeah, okay.
So, yeah. I am a fan of other systems. There's not one that sticks out in my mind as like, oh, I'm gonna go for it. But I did one time I had to learn Cortex in like 2.5 days. And Cortex, I would say, is fairly high level, definitely at a higher level for crunchiness than Dungeons and Dragons. And that was really hard. But luckily I just had to learn it for one shot game, and it all worked out. It was all fine, but it was like a crash course and like, okay, I guess we're doing this for 2.5 days. But it was cool to know that I could do it, you know. It's like a challenge.
Yeah, it's good to have that, like, that test yourself, like, oh, I have to learn the system now. Okay, I did it, great, I still got
it. exactly.
How has the stand-up been going?
Oh, thanks for asking. I took a class like starting 3 months ago, and at the end of it, there's a showcase. So far I've done one showcase and one actual show, and I'm going to stick with it. I think it feeds into, so I've got a lot of improv in my background, a lot of plays in my background, a lot of sketch comedy in my background. And it was kind of like, well, what's next? Like, I kind of have done a lot of the comedy. Where do I apply this next? And so I was like, well, may as well try stand up. So it's going well. It is it is not as aggressive, competitive, or isolating as anyone thinks it is. That was a big kind of aha moment for me, where it's like, oh no, this is very community based. Like, obviously no one's writing right next to you, but gosh, you can get friends to weigh in and punch up your jokes and come to your shows, and you go to their shows, and it's I thought it would be really lonely, and it just turns out that it is not lonely at all. Like, there's a cool community around it. So that changed my mind about it quite a bit.
Yeah, getting that inviting community definitely makes everything seem less.
Oh yeah,
like there's less.
I'm sure there are stinkers out there too, and people have told me that there are open mics. The open mics not to go to if there's like tonally the content is not as above board, or they lean into a lot of like sexual comedy or misogynistic stuff or even racism still in 2023, which is like really but I've got the lowdown for which open mics to go to and which shows and all of that, because the community is like very verbal about, you know, oh come here, do that, I'm running a show, I produce this. So it's going, I guess it's really going well, I think. I'm a fan of it. I'm a fan of the art form.
Good. That's fantastic. I've been seeing the couple of things you posted on your socials. They're funny. I laughed at them. So
oh, that's good. Yeah. Promising. Okay. Okay. Whew. Got Cody's stamp of approval.
Oh yeah. It's
that's how you know.
Not worth a lot, but you got it.
I'll take it. I'll take whatever I can get.
Fantastic. I kind of want to end this on a, since we've talked about your silliness, end this on like a sillier note. What is some of the most shenanigans thing that has happened to you as a DM that just kind of stuck with you throughout the years?
Oh yeah, as a DM, I'm going to tell a little bit of a story of what happened at my last table, which was a truly, truly a table of six dungeon masters who I was running the game for. Oh, man. So
pressure. Okay.
We get to there is a story, like it's a cool world. We're all playing in it, and they're just delights to play for and with, because they get it, right? They get like, okay, we're going for something here. Like they just, it's like, yes. And all day long, like we're these people mm-hmm. now, and we're gonna get to what we get to, and they were just really honoring my story, which God, what a godsend. So we did that, then we get to the end, and this is gonna be like the culmination of a lot of stuff, and they, instead of, I thought it was just like pretty easy that this to define this like character, this big bad evil guy, this woman, ultimately a Medusa, as very evil, like had going all the way back to child, like the reason for their childhood trauma very okay. easily. This is true. Kill her. They decided to sacrifice themselves to be stones in their garden to have one final word with her, evoking her humanity and her ethos to try to change her mind that things didn't have to be this way. And I was like, what? and wanted to reward them for something. But you know, like D&D, like I'm saying before, like the system itself isn't built for, it's binary. It's really good because it's simple, but it's not built for like this storytelling. And so there's no, there are like mechanics for killing monsters. There's no mechanics for being a good person. Yeah. You know? Yeah, so I had them, I made up a number and I was like, I'm going to make this really difficult. They would all have to roll like really pretty high for this. And I made them, each one of them roll all of their stats, all of their ability scores, and add up all of that number all the way to a certain number. And they weren't going to get it, but then they were like, of course, classic. Like, I think I set the DC at like 500 or something. I can't remember. Okay. But it was like, it would be achievable if all of them rolled like pretty much somewhere between, well, they would have to get like 15 or higher on many of their rolls.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't going to happen. And then they were like, oh my God, Amy, remember how that NPC said she would come along with us and we haven't like really talked about her in a couple of sessions? And I was like,
okay,
oh my God. Like, I don't know if that ever happens to you where you just forget about this NPC that apparently is along for the ride. Yeah,
for sure. All the time.
Okay. So they like added a whole other person and they're like, she's doing it too. And I was like, ah, and like with that, and then they convinced me that like, they were, you know, through role play that the monster herself could roll her stats too. I mean, it was shenanigans. Let's just say it was shenanigans in like a very stinkery way where I was like, yeah, like I can get behind this. You all make really good points and I want to reward you. Like you're about to turn, everyone's going to turn to stone. So I guess we'll change the course of history for the world in a different way than I thought it was going to happen. But yeah, it was a cool way to end it. The shenanigans happened on the mechanic side is what I'll say. Yeah, I mean, that's... and in the story, because it was like, what? Y'all just aren't going to fight her? Okay. I guess you're just not going to fight her. Okay. My brain was broken. So
yeah, it's, you can try and plan for a D&D game as much as you want, but you can't plan for your players because stuff like that.
They were like,
that
we've
happens.
All lived a good life. Thank you. We're gonna be the people who peace out, exactly. We're gonna be the Neos. We're just gonna change the course of history, and I think that'll be a good life lived. All of us. All six of us. Yeah. It's like, okay.
That's where you're like, you have like a set of like writer's dice, like, how do I end the story?
Yeah. Seriously. And it's like that's what I love about it is when, you know, the players come in and you're like, no, not that. Why? No. And then it's like, well, yeah, I guess so. Like, and that was my idea all along. I'm so smart.
Yeah.
It's so weird how I think of so many hypotheticals, so many. And I never think of the hypothetical that they think of.
There was a similar situation like that happened in a game of mine a couple years ago where I had laid out this evil. She was definitively evil, like unsavable, killed everybody in sight, was responsible for at least two of the players' tragic backstories, and they got into the fight with her. And the one guy was like, I want to talk to her. I was like, okay, what do you say? And he said something in character that was so heartfelt and emotional that I was like, because like normally I would just be like, all right, well, she's super evil, you have to roll super high, but he said something in character that was so great that I was like, all right, make a persuasion check, I don't know, the DC's like 12, man. And he got a 1, and I was like, all right, that fits for the rest of my story. He's like, wait, I have inspiration. I was like, damn it, I shouldn't have given that. And then he turned around and got like a 17 or something. I was like,
oh my gosh.
Well, now the big bad evil is going to stop doing that.
I know.
And I guess help you guys?
Yeah. Like, no.
Yeah, it was an absolute treat. I talk smack about it, but that's the part I like the most about running games for people is like, here's this story that I've laid out. And like, I know where I want it to go. And like, you know, you sprinkle in those things. Oh, go here, go there, do that. But then something happens on the other side of the table that just changes the story. And you have to just react with it. I did live theater like when I was younger. But I haven't done it in a very long time. And I'd like just having that energy come back at you where you have to think on your feet and move and just go with it. Top notch. Everybody should try to run a game. It's very hard. Give it a shot.
Oh, yeah. It's also, the prep is the most heavy lifting. And then once you're in the game, like, I mean, they're carrying so much of it. Like, they carry so much of the weight that it is. I mean, you do have to be quick on your feet and you have to have known some stuff ahead of time. But once you already have known that stuff and can pivot and, like, move the pieces around, like, I really think there's a... Yeah, the heavy lift during the gameplay is on the players. So it's both easier and harder than people think it is.
Yeah, that's true. My biggest flaw whenever I'm running a game is I love to improv. So like I don't plan for what item's gonna be in this chest or what potion you're gonna find. So I'll just come up with something in the heat of the moment, but then I forget to write it down.
Right.
So then like 3 sessions later when they pull out this plus whatever bastard sword, I'm like, where'd you get that from? Oh, from me? I don't think so.
Yeah. Pass like, me. Be better.
I can't take notes while I'm running the game.
No, my notes are like, they're always like a list of NPC names. And I'm like, well, that kind of helps. Like looking back, it's like, I guess you ran into Rob and Jerkin.
Oh my God, that just... That just happened to me literally last night. I came up with this, there was like this ceremony in town, and I came up with 7 NPCs, and I had all the little men like, this is this one, this is this one, this is this one. They didn't talk to any of these freaking people. I was like, all right, I have backstories and like plot lines for all these people. Nobody talked to any of them. Thanks, guys. Go talk to the random quirky NPC I made off the off the top of my hat over in the corner, but none of these people that have established backstories. Thanks.
Right, right. Oh my gosh.
Just the chaotic nature of D&D or TTRPGs in general is just, it's fantastic.
It's the really best time. Is. It's addicting.
It really is. We so we play like every other Thursday. And like as the game was ending last night, like two of the people were walking out of my house. They're like, man, I want to keep playing. I was like, that's the best feeling too, as somebody running the game, when they're like, I just want to keep playing. Like, can we keep playing? I was like, it's 11 o'clock. We're adults and have to work.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Oh, that's lovely. Yeah, to provide that for someone is really cool.
Yeah, it's really good. Like I said, like you said, everybody should give it a shot, but at least once.
Yeah.
I want to very, very much thank you for joining me for this past almost hour. I know you've got a lot of things to do and a lot of people to see and talk to, so I really appreciate it coming around to the Geek Peak channel. Is there any last parting words of wisdom you would like to give or plug all your stuff again?
I want to say it's been a real joy to be on the channel, so I'm really happy that you reached out. And
well, thanks.
What do I want to plug? Just my Patreon, and then you can always find me at Vorpal Sword. I'm always doing something. I've been uploading reels, a little more reels lately this year, and that's on Instagram, and then I put them on TikTok as well. And other than that, just come hang out with me. Oh, the big thing is I do have a newsletter that I send out once a month. It's all free, and it's just a little more context to what I'm getting up to than just like the pristine, like curated social media that everyone sees. So that's at amyvorpal.com/subscribe. And it really is just one email a month, and you get a little bit of behind the scenes of what's going on in my life. I'm pretty, it's pretty personal as well. Like I'm dating a lot now. You get to hear about those stories and, you know, just anything that's going on. Oh, yeah,
you did the speed dating just yesterday, I think?
I did. I did speed dating on Tuesday.
Well, hang on. We got to talk about that for a little bit longer. Hang around.
Okay, sure. I'm happy to do that. Yeah, I'm really ready in my life to, like, have a life partner and a husband. And that my best guess on how to do that is to meet a bunch of men. I'm hetero, so it's just like, okay, let's go. So I'm on the apps and speed dating was like a really fun way to do it too. I got recognized 4 times that night, which was,
oh wow.
Yeah, kind of fun. The bartender, but I mean, I will say I'm in Los Angeles and that's where all the improv folks are. And I think a lot of people,
okay, that's true,
like,
yeah,
love the quirky humor of Dropout in, I mean, yeah, it's, there's an audience for it here. So that was cool. The bartender recognized me and made me a free drink because I don't drink. So I was like, non-alcoholic. And he was like, I got you. And then he didn't make me pay for it. So that was cool.
Nice.
That would be silly if that was the highlight of the night. But yeah, I met a lot of really cool people. there were 25 men and 25 women. You went on 9 7-minute dates. And then there were breaks where you could talk to anyone who you weren't going to be able to go on a 7-minute date with. And so and then at the end of the night, you like select, you tell like the company, like which ones you want to have your information. And so that's who they like give out the information to. And then you get the email the next day, if there are any guys that want you to have their information. And
did you get that email?
I did, and 9 out of 9 men wanted me to have their emails, which is...
Oh, hell yes!
Oh, yeah, I won. I won speed dating.
I think that means you win, yeah. That's a clean sweep, I think, is the sports term.
It was a clean sweep, yeah. Now, I did at one point look over at a table nearby me, and the girl was, like, off her ass drunk. So the competition may not have been as high as, you know, like, yes, clean sweep, and... you know, you got to do the math asterisk, of, you know, like, yeah. I was present, sober, making eye contact, you know, like, how low is the bar? The bar
for yourself? You got,
we'll never know. Yeah, yes.
Yeah.
So, but it was really magical and fun. And I gave my email to three of the men. And then there were two guys who asked me out or asked for my number during the breaks. And one I said, no, I'm good. And the other one I said, yeah, okay. So, I mean, you're making decisions just as fast as you are on the apps. It's just, you're making decisions, I think, based on vibes as opposed to, like, the two-dimensional. And men are notorious. Yeah. I'll just tell you, like, hetero men, y'all, get it together. Like, the way that they take y'all, or I don't know if you're hetero, or even what your pronouns are, but
tell me. He, him. Thank you, though.
He, him. Okay.
All the way at the end of the interview. Yes, my pronouns are he, him. Thanks.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, thanks, Cody.
We'll put it at, like, the bottom of the interview. Oh, okay, airs. Great. We'll put, you know, Cody, he, him, Amy, she, her.
Okay, perfect. Yeah. Anyway, my experience is men do not take great pictures of themselves. So you're like I would say that even of all the three that I gave my email to, I'm like, I know the picture they would take, and I would not be like, they would not smile. And that's kind of a deal breaker for me on the apps. Like, need to know what a smile on your face looks like. That's what I need to know.
When I was on the apps several years ago, whenever I would, like, get a new profile picture, I would run it past all of my female friends. All of my gay friends, like, is this a good picture? They're like, you got it. I was like, all right, cool. Like, that's the picture I'm going to go with then.
Got it. Yeah, you do. You need that feedback, man. You're presenting, like, it's such a two-dimensional, such a reductive little resume that you've got going on there. And it is, so it's important. It's important. I don't know.
There were no pictures of me holding up fish that I caught, so...
I'm not opposed to that. I grew up in Texas, so everyone's like, slumming on that or dragging that. There's a lot that I'm like, I hear you, but also, what if they like fishing? And I mean, my dad, my brother-in-law, like, I get it. And my nephews, it's like, yeah, I want to see them catch fish. Like, I don't like fishing. I'm not going to go with you, but I understand the excitement about it. Yeah. I don't think you're any, but it's like, in that moment, it's a vibe, right? It's a vibe. I have an opinion about the fish picture. Okay. If you're in your life and you have a moment where you just feel like your best self and you take a picture there, that's a vibe. That's an energy that's like radiating confidence. You're happy on that day. You get to show that to your friends. It's like catching a shiny Pokemon. You want people to know. Same as like winning an award or giving a speech or being, you know, getting your hair done and taking that selfie. It's the same vibe. It is victorious and confident. And so that's why they're putting the picture on there. They're feeling victorious and confident in that moment. It has nothing to do with like, look how manly I, like, no, that's, you're, that's, if a woman's complaining about that, then that is more the woman's thing than it is the man's thing. To me, if a man is posting a fish picture, catching a fish can take 5 minutes, but it can take 6 hours. And then you feel really confident and like fucking victorious at the end of it. Like, so take a picture and then use that. It's an energy. Look into the energy of the picture, not what's in the picture there.
That's a really good way to look at it. And I hope that the way you're looking at it is the way that those people are projecting it as well.
I hope so too. I know. Yeah. Look at me. I'm like giving everyone the benefit of the doubt. And they're like, no, I just want to show you how much of a man I am. And it's like, oh, oops, I got it wrong.
There was I need to find this picture again. There was a picture a friend of mine took while I was DMing that it was kind of like that. Like, I wasn't aware that they took it. I was in the middle of some villain monologue, but I was leaning over the screen. I had this big smile on my face, and they took this picture and sent it to me like 2 days later. And I was like, that is me, like my personality in essence distilled into one picture as a DM.
It was
the best picture. I showed everybody for years. I was like, check this out.
Yeah. Find that one again. Aww, I love that.
That was back before the shaving started, but. I'm like, so my brother-in-law does a lot of costuming, and I borrowed like his cowl for the game. So like I have this like dark blue cowl on with like leather on it. I'm behind like this all wooden DM screen.
Ooh.
And it just, it like the whole thing, like you said, it was a vibe. Like it was just,
Perfect.
That would be like my like jacket book picture. Like if I wrote a book, that'd be a
yes.
In the back of the book would be that picture.
Oh, amazing. Yes.
Yeah.
Perfect. And it worked, right? It sounds like it worked.
Yeah, it worked. Oh, okay, yeah. Good. It worked. Good. You were talking about your witch something?
Yeah, I say witch because most people call it a witch. My female wizard, my green hat and like all of that. Okay, like that to me is like, that is who I am. Like gorgeous made up, you know, I call it a shaman princess, a fairy shaman princess wizard. I think I got them all. And I know, fairy shaman princess wizard, traipsing through the forest in like a ball gown type thing, but not afraid to get it dirty with moss on it. And so that, I am heavily made up. I have like, that's with a makeup artist help, but it also is exactly who I am.
That's so fantastic.
I get it. Yeah. That's definitely on the dating profile. I did. Oh my God. I have to tell you, there was this one guy who I've been matching with, but never went on a date with for 10 years. Like no joke, just across the apps. Cause I've been single most of my life. So I know when people are on the apps and it is always like, oh my God, you're still here and I'm still here. Oh my gosh.
And we meet again, but we're not going to meet. Don't worry.
Yeah. But this time we did, I met him last Friday.
Okay.
And the way I knew it was him this whole time is one, he didn't change his look ever, but also he has a picture of him dressed as Elliot from E.T., the red hoodie with E.T. in front of him. Mm-hmm. And he has used that picture the entire time that I've been on the apps. And I called him out. I was like, Andrew, you have used your Elliot picture across a decade. And he was like, I know. It's the best picture of me. And I'm like, I'll tell you, I fundamentally disagree, but mm-hmm. he thinks it's the best picture of him. And he's like, if I had my choice, I would never wear anything else ever than my Elliot costume. I think it's the best costume in the whole world. And I'm like, it's a red hoodie. Like,
is it exact same picture or has he recreated it as the years have gone
the
on?
The exact same picture. Oh, I got confirmation, Cody. I got confirmation. Oh, wow. I was like, this is the same picture. He's like, yes, it is. I look the same. I'm like, honestly, you do look the same. Like, not going to fight you there. You like, no knocks on that. You do look exactly the same as you did 10 years ago. But also, what? Like your personality hasn't changed. And so, I mean, I said this to his face, so I don't mind telling you on the entire internet that this happened, but it's mind boggling. I mean, I still match with him, you know, so who's to say, but, it was nice to finally meet him after matching for really 10 years. Like I'm maybe 12 years. I don't know.
That seems like the next movie to write. You know, you've matched on all these apps, all these times over all these years and never got together. And then finally, aw.
Now, I will say we both like, we're like, this is great. We'll be friends. You know, like there wasn't a real match. But so the years maybe did the work for us. You know, we were never really supposed to meet. But he was definitely like a person who I would say I would stay friends with for sure. Like there are some people that you're like, I never need to see you again. Bye. But he was like of the ilk, you know, nerdy, likes movies, had something to say about the D&D movie, maybe never played, but like works on the internet. Like there was a lot of commonalities, but in some cases I do think we had too many commonalities. So it was like, I don't need another me, you know?
Yeah. One me is enough. I don't need to hang out with me all day. I do that in my mind enough. It's fine.
Yes. Oh, Cody, we have diverged. Oh,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, this is now turning into a psychology podcast. So, Amy, when you were a child.
Oh, man. No, I'm not going there.
No, I am definitely not going there either. I'm sure there's plenty to unpack for everybody involved, but I'm not the one to talk to you about that. I don't know my own brain well enough to pick apart somebody else's brain. No, everybody should go to therapy though at least once.
Yes, agreed.
And on that super cheerful positive note,
go to therapy.
Go to therapy, try D&D. This is the second time we're trying in this podcast, but it's just been an absolute joy to have you here, so I'm in no rush to end it.
Yes.
Thanks for joining
me. Lovely to talk to you, Cody.
We'll have to do it again soon.
Sounds good.